It's Sunday, which means it's time for Viewpoint Presents with Malcolm and Michael Johns. Each week, we bring you the top global and national news stories presented with facts and top-tier analysis, all from a perspective rooted in America's founding principles. Join us in defending our great nation and American liberty. Now, here's Malcolm and Michael with the week's top stories.
The one thing that I am absolutely certain of is Joe Biden is a failed politician who really has been feeding off the system for almost five decades. Can you believe that? Five decades? You know, remember now, Joe Biden was the 47th vice president of the United States from 2009, of course, till 2017. He was the former U.S. senator from Delaware. And of course, that he got in there, by the way, in 1973. By golly, I was about in diapers back then, I have to tell you. And he ran as a formerly now ran as a failed Democrat candidate for president in 1988 and 2008. And now, out of desperation, the Socialist Democrat Party of America needed a stooge. And where did they look? Well, no other than Joe Biden. And that's where we'll start today, my fellow Americans. Welcome to Viewpoint Presents. This is Malcolm here along with Michael Johns. And I think that is the place to start when we talk about Joe Biden. You know, there's a history of Joe Biden. And I think the old saying goes, if you want to predict the future, you sort of have to know the history. You have to look in the past to know what that candidate has accomplished or who they are or what they've done. And Michael, you and I have talked fairly extensively about Biden and his, well, I don't know what you want to call it, career, I guess, or whatever it is, but over five decades, you know, I almost prefer to say five decades rather than 47 years because it gives people the real perspective of what we're talking about here. But really, I think they needed somebody, what I mentioned as a stooge, to put in that role. And they picked Joe Biden. For whatever reason, in your mind, Michael, would they put somebody like Joe Biden in that as their candidate du jour? Why is that?
I think, firstly, great to be back with you, Malcolm, episode 14. As we roll along, I believe that Joe Biden is seen by the Democrat Party establishment as a reliable and largely controllable figure who is wholly integrated and not going to deviate from what he's told to do. So in essence, if you like establishment politics, individuals who will essentially not provide leadership, but will be led by corporate forces, by the radical left, by all the various pressures that are placed on this major political party, he's the guy that you want to put forward. If you want a guy who's going to inspire the American people, he clearly is not the candidate. I mean, I don't see him inspiring anyone. I believe you have two types of voters in the 2020 general election, and that is pro-Trump voters and anti-Trump voters. Is there such a thing as a pro-Biden voter base? I don't really believe there is. I think he's, you know, attempted to minimize the projection of him as being influenced by the radical left. You could see that in the contradictory statements he's made on fracking. You can see it in the contradictory statements he's made in a whole broad range of issues, where he's attempting to present himself as a very relatable, sensible, reasonable guy, and he's none of that. He is a guy who has traded public service for extraordinary financial gain of his family over the last 47 years, who has accomplished almost nothing for the American people during that time. I mean, literally, you don't even hear him singling out any accomplishment that he's had over the last 47 years because he's had no such accomplishment except holding this positional authority. And importantly, when you look at the actual history that he has, and particularly those very eight unremarkable Obama years, every metric really left the American people worse off. It was, you know, lowest home ownership in 51 years, 11 million more Americans on food stamps. Just isolate that issue alone, that they came in saying they were going to help the poor, and they left 11 million more Americans reliant on food stamps. And before they arrived, 43 million, that's an extraordinary number of Americans, were living in poverty when they left office. The trade deficit, particularly as it related to their inability to confront China, exploded on their watch to $873 billion. And here's an important metric, manufacturing. They lost, Obama and Biden lost 300,000 manufacturing jobs in those 8 years. Trump created 500,000 manufacturing jobs in 3 years. Yeah. So while he's out there trying to present himself as Joe from Scranton, who's going to look out for hardworking men and women and bring jobs back, he has a track record now, and his track record is destroying those jobs, not creating them. Trump's the guy who has created 500,000 manufacturing jobs, the biggest explosion in manufacturing jobs in decades in this country.
Yeah, they have indeed gutted out the manufacturing. We've been saying that right along. They've also gutted out the enthusiasm factor. In fact, we've looked at a lot of those questions that have been put out there to the American people and surveys that have been put out. And people say, well, number one, they're better off right now, even in a pandemic under this administration, by far and large than they were under the Obama years.
Now, 57%.
That's right.
I believe it is, right?
It is indeed 57%. That's a compelling number, Michael.
It's extraordinary because you really can't. Can you envision a voter just ask this question hypothetically? So if that 57% is about right, can you envision the voter who would go in to cast their ballot at a polling location at believing that the country is better off today than it was 4 years ago, who would vote to go back to the guy who was running the country, jointly running the country 4 years ago? It just seems like that is inconceivable, which gets to the broader point of why I think these whole national polls are misleading, inaccurate, and not relevant, because it's not a national election. It's an election for 270 electoral votes. That's really what should be. Every poll should really be based on what the projected electoral vote count is, because it could be that Trump loses by 7 points or so in the popular vote and wins the electoral vote count, maybe overwhelmingly. So how meaningful is that 7 point deficit right now as it's relating to what's being drilled into the minds of American voters every day?
Yeah, well, there is no you can't normalize what you're talking about when it comes to what they're drilling into the American people, because it is all bull-faced lies. And even the truths they take, they twist them so badly, which is what we've been talking about here right along in the theme, is the media. In fact, Senator Ron Johnson set up at the top of the first hour, Michael, exactly that point. He's almost speechless when it comes to where the Fourth Estate and our free press and our country have taken our nation. Not to get sidetracked on that point, I want to come back to the enthusiasm gap that you're talking about, Michael, and a couple of points here I want to make with you. Number one, you're so right, again, in your brilliant analysis to point out this fact that is not so obvious to a lot of people, but I want you all to think out there about this. Now, think about this. If you've got a man that is running for any office, let alone the presidency, who's been there for almost 5 decades, okay, right? Somebody of that stature, of that nature, who's been around so long, clearly they have a list of accomplishments from here to there, right? I mean, it's a long, long list you would be able to spout. Well, you haven't heard that from the Biden campaign. You haven't heard that from the candidate. You haven't heard that from any of the people, his surrogates around. You don't hear that point. Well, Biden did this. Biden did that. Biden accomplished that. Biden did extraordinary things for the American people. Well, none of that is discussed. And then you see, Michael, at the debate where President Trump says, and he calls him out on it and says, Joe, where have you been? Where have you been, man? Yep. I mean, you've been here for 47 blessed years. What have you done?
Yeah, it's very difficult, I think, almost impossible, when you have spent nearly half a century in these capacities, and you're saying that here's your bold vision for the future, and you haven't executed on that vision in the past 50 years. And, you know, that's the issue right now. So, for instance, when I talk about these manufacturing jobs, which Obama and Biden destroyed and Trump has supported and created, it's important not just from the standpoint of what the deliverable metric is, but also, were they even motivated to try to create manufacturing jobs? In my judgment, being, I think, very close to what I see as this major emerging threat from China that is going to define, in my judgment, the 21st century of this country. They had an operating plan of basically this managed decline, which is what the establishment believes and has been preaching for decades, which is that the United States rural manufacturing doesn't fit into their vision of the global order, meaning they want to diminish these manufacturing costs. They feel offloading it to Asian countries, and particularly China, that's been more than happy to take millions of these jobs, that fits their vision of how the world should function. Well, many of us, and put me in this camp, are more concerned with how the United States of America is going to perform, how these policies are going to impact people, you know, in Des Moines, in Akron, in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. That's what matters. In Lansing, Michigan, how is it impacting those people? I think ultimately this very election separate the personalities involved, which has been a message you've communicated actually over the last few months. Separate the personalities, Malcolm, and look at the policy visions that are represented in both. You got in Joe Biden, the guy who's dodging accountability for his vision, who's told you he's going to raise his taxes. By the way, when he says he's going to repeal Trump's tax cuts, don't forget that 80-some percent of Americans and middle-income workers experience tax relief on that. When you get rid of that, you're not raising taxes on people making over 400 grand in income. You're raising taxes on people making, you know, as little as $10,000 or $11,000 a year. Part-time workers even are going to experience tax increase on his watch, because that he cut those, each one of those rates were dropped. And that message, not sure it's getting through to Americans, but it certainly needs to. It's an important one, I think, for us to communicate as voters make a decision here, is that, you know, if you're working in any capacity, earning income, your taxes are going up on this guy's watch in the middle of a pandemic-related recession. I mean, yesterday, for instance, look at the respective candidates. President Trump woke up in Palm Beach, Florida, cast his vote, said he very amusingly said he voted for a guy named Trump, which I thought was pretty funny when he came out.
I've seen that.
And then he flew to North Carolina and conducted and spoke at a rally there.
And did he vote for Trump again in North Carolina as the Democrats do?
It probably might have been inclined to, but I think he's got a little more respect for the rule of law and didn't do that. But, you know, you raise a legitimate issue. Why we're not purging these voter registration rolls nationally. From there, he flew to North Carolina. He flies to Ohio and then to Wisconsin, I believe. So for literally four states in a day. Now, what did Biden do? I mean, he sort of got in his car and sluggishly drove across the Delaware River into Bucks County, gave a speech to a few people that didn't even get out of their cars, and in 20 minutes really had no point. You know, you could just see the venom and the hate that he has for Trump and the fact that he just resents that Trump's president of the United States and that the Obama legacy is being systematically undone. It wasn't much of a legacy to begin with. But you didn't really hear from him any pointed criticisms as it relates to the policies of Trump or what he would do differently. So you get these vague, you know, it's almost a libelous allegation that Trump is personally responsible for 220,000 deaths, which is ridiculous, because actually what he is responsible for is saving hundreds of thousands mm-hmm. of lives. That's indisputable and is a complete result, which American voters need to keep fresh in mind, mm-hmm. that this travel ban, which you and I have spoken about probably just about every week, mm-hmm. was one of the most important, singular most important decisions made by a president in our lifetimes. And it, if it had not been put in place, as it would not have been put in place if Biden were president, the magnitude of this would be astronomical. And then I think finally, you know, if you're going to, as Biden's doing, make your ability to manage this pandemic the centerpiece of your campaign, meaning saying, Trump is not doing it correctly, I will do it correctly, you better have a pretty good track record of actually doing that. He was put in a position of authority of managing the H1N1 virus, and according to his own chief of staff, made every possible wrong decision. All right. So even the people that were closest to him, who had both personal and professional loyalty to Biden, say that he completely mismanaged it, and only by happenstance did this not become a major pandemic, only because it was not as transmittable and was not as deadly as coronavirus actually is.
So there appears not to be a pro-Biden voter that we're seeing. We're not seeing a lot of pro-Biden, which again goes to the
not in this country. Not in this country. Yeah, I think in China, maybe, Russia, maybe. Not in this country, though.
And it goes back to the enthusiasm gap we're speaking about, Michael. There's not a lot of pro-Biden. As you say, there is the pro-Trump, the really excited voter there, and then you have the anti-Trump voter. That tells you a whole lot right there. And that gets back to who Biden is as a candidate, as a man, as a politician. The other interesting takeaway from what we're talking about, and you're so right to point it out, policy after policy after policy. One thing that, and one thing I will compliment, Michael, and you may or may not agree with this, but that I would compliment Joe Biden and more so the Biden campaign, not Joe himself, but the Biden people, the campaign, the people who are running the campaign behind the scenes, all of those folks. I think they've been really, really sharp and very diligent about their messaging. They have been very careful to not step on bombs. They've avoided, they know they got the media in their pocket. They've used the American media as their best tool. They've stayed out of the weeds on the things that don't matter. And they're very careful not to A, step on the message, and B, stay away from all of these arguments, like, you know, all of it. I mean, the Hunter Biden thing, that they just don't even talk about it. They just forget about it. You know, they get a pass by the media. They get a pass by everybody.
That's it. In the absence of that, I'm not so confident in their ability to manage this. I mean, here are some questions. Just if you're covering the Biden campaign, mm-hmm. every major media outlet in this country has a reporter assigned yeah. to traveling with Biden, covering Biden day to day. Biden isn't really traveling too much. He more or less is staying in. I mean, like whole days, he won't like leave his house in Delaware because he doesn't want to answer these questions. He knows he can't attract a crowd.
But he's getting
ice
cream.
He knows that his message is not.
He is getting ice cream.
Yeah, well, apparently.
Oh, the president said, what's the flavor you're
look,
getting?
I'll tell you, right now, you know, it's so important, as you've obviously been able to tell, that in my view, for the future of this country, whatever you think of President Trump, even if you have issues with his demeanor or whatnot, which admittedly is, his, you know, there's a guy from Queens who grew up in a culture that is, you know, probably a little more rugged than most of the rest of the country. Set that aside for the moment. This is what I can tell you indisputably. This is a candidate who has the welfare of the American people first and foremost in his mind when he makes policy decisions. That's what you want in a candidate. The history of Biden is one of how does this impact me politically? Is this helpful or hurtful? Is this something that the media is going to like or not like? Is this something that the people have been enriching yeah. my family from China?
That's the key
Russia,
right there. That's the key know, right a, there, the enriching my
how
family
are they,
part.
How are they going to view? Well, is Xi yeah. Jinping going to have a problem if I do this? You mm-hmm. can't have a – you cannot have – you know, on a congressional level, you have something like that. You kind of manage through it, and maybe the country survives. When you put the chief of, you know, the chief executive of the country mm-hmm. in a position who has conflicting loyalties, who doesn't have the working men and women of this country for, and the welfare of the people of this country first and foremost in their minds, that is problematic. Which is why the Hunter Biden story, again, not being covered, really matters. So for instance, here are questions you would ask. $3.5 million sent by the wife of this Russian oligarch who's a wife of the former mayor of Moscow. Mm-hmm. What was it for? What were the terms? What was Hunter Biden given $3.5 million to do? Why is that question not being asked? You would ask this question on taxes. When you say you're only going to raise taxes on people making over $400,000 and also say you're going to repeal the tax cuts, yeah. which cut taxes on low and middle income Americans, mm-hmm. reconcile those two things for us because it doesn't add up. You would ask questions about re-entering the Paris Accord and sending all this money to all of these developing countries and not holding China accountable. And pressing questions about China itself, which haven't been asked. What in the ideal world does both Biden and the media owe voters? It is a full stop, second, open press conference and full disclosure of any, even every dime that has come into this family from foreign yeah. sources, what the terms of those payments were and what work or efforts were exerted mm-hmm. in exchange for them and what the terms of them are. That right. should be in a functioning democratic system that is ostensibly designed to hold elected officials and candidates accountable
yeah.
for their positions and their actions. That's what you would have. And that's what we're not getting. But also the fact that he's getting away with it.
Well, he's absolutely getting away with it. And let's just say this, there has been, and really they do need a press conference at this point. There has been no press conference whatsoever for the American people. Now, could you all imagine Joe Biden coming out right now and answering questions? Now, imagine if he would do what President Trump does on a regular basis, that he would come out, really take real questions from the people, from the press. And I mean, really a legitimate press conference here. Now, the American people are entitled to that. And they should, we deserve exactly that, especially for a candidate running for president. Yet you're not getting anything close to that. You're not even getting the normal back and forth with the media and this candidate. Again, he's, as you'd say, in his bunker and only goes out for either ice cream or to cross the Delaware River and do whatever he's going to do. It is the strangest of campaigns you've ever seen in your life. And, you know, it's been ongoing. And we were all wondering how it was going to end. And as we were getting closer and closer and closer to the election, and here we are, and nothing has really changed in the past many months. It's the same thing. So when you look at the enthusiasm gap, you look at the policy gap, you look at the career politician, you look at Biden being who he is, he's an empty suit, basically. And that's what you got here, my fellow Americans. That's the campaign you have in front of you. And I mean, I don't think any of this is partisan, really and truly. It's just, I mean, all fact, what we're talking about, what Michael and I are talking to you here about. So, well, let me go through a few things with you here today. You're listening to Viewpoint Presents here. Again, it's Malcolm along with Michael Johns. And listen, let's get into this show. And let me give you some little points that you know. This program now does go to podcast. It plays on Sunday, as you know, at 11 a.m. Sunday morning, just after Viewpoint this Sunday. It is probably the best 2 hours of talk radio, I believe, from 10 to 12. Join us Sunday morning there on America Out Loud Talk Radio. The show all goes to podcast pretty quick, in fact, that afternoon, Sunday afternoon, just after 2 p.m. Eastern time. You'll find it on podcast networks worldwide and at the top of AmericaOutLoud.com. And by the way, there is an encore later in the day from 6 to 8, Viewpoint this Sunday, Viewpoint Presents. It's a 2 hours of extraordinary talk radio where you can get the latest, get the fill, understand what's going on, what the arguments are, the issues are. Now, let me also give you a program and message. We have probably the two most important weeks coming up in this election cycle is going to be these next couple of weeks here now in American history, I believe. A lot of things can happen here. And I suggest to you, it's going to go beyond the third being Tuesday. The next 2 weeks are going to be very interesting. We don't know what's going to happen, but there needs to be a lot of reporting. There needs to be a lot of honesty as a nation, who we are, what happens next, and what just happened. Those are the questions we need to be asking. What just happened? How did it happen? And what happens next? Now, on a good note, Michael Johns will be joining me on The Voice of a Nation, our weekly program, my daily program, as you know, Monday through Friday on America Out Loud Talk Radio. Now, that's at 6 p.m. Eastern time. And so join us there. And there are some days we're going to do 2 hour programs, in fact, and specials over the next couple of weeks. But do join us. And we have a lot to talk about on the program and get you the latest information and the facts as they are happening here. So a lot going on in this busy election cycle. We'll stay glued to it, as you will hear as well. We're going to take a quick pause. We'll be back in just a moment with more Viewpoint Presents just after this pause.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
My fellow Americans, you've watched for decades as radical Marxists have systematically taken over some of our nation's most cherished institutions. Well, AmericaOutLoud.com is fighting back with one of the fastest growing conservative media networks in the world, featuring some of the nation's most influential experts and commentators. Join us. We're in this together. And we consider you part of our family in our crusade to share the news, commentary, and agenda that can lead America back again. It is a fight for the soul of humanity. America Out Loud Talk Radio is the voice of liberty and justice for all. As our country has gone through this pretty wicked several years of Russia, 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 which again, you've seen the president call them out on the debate stage and said, oh, here we go again, Russia, Russia, Russia. Of course, at that point, he was speaking about the disinformation campaign they are trying feverishly to push out there as another way to cover up the real information and real news. And this is all, of course, spotlighted in the top of Viewpoint this Sunday with the interview with Senator Ron Johnson here on this two-hour block today. But I have to tell you, China is, we have pointed out continually, is our biggest nemesis and will be. So the real danger in this that saddens me and bothers me, as the political class have been like talking Russia, 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 it really is China has been the big problem here. You know, Michael, all of this was highlighted in a big, big way with the pandemic. And, you know, I've been thinking about something which is kind of weird, actually, to think about it this way. For a period of time now, even before this pandemic, well before the pandemic, in fact, we had been discussing on the network and in other circles here about the dangers of China and that they were going to be the force to reckon with for the United States of America moving forward in the future. And I wonder in a weird sort of way, and this probably won't sound right, but I wonder, now, we didn't expect it this soon. Truth be told, Michael, and I don't know if you agree with this, but I think we were talking, I was talking maybe, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years even ahead, probably 10, 15 maybe ahead, they would have became a real problem. You see the buildup in the South China Seas, you see their strategic relationships with Iran, you see what they're doing with the Middle East, you see how they're trying to get into all these things. So we didn't see it coming that soon. And I wonder in a weird sort of way, if you would agree with this statement, maybe in some kind of a strange, odd way, maybe the pandemic was kind of a gift. And I know this doesn't sound right, but maybe it was sort of a kind of a strange blessing that it put this all out in the light of day right now. Because had this not happened, we wouldn't really be talking about China and the dangers of China right now. Does that sound kind of weird to you?
Well, not entirely, because if you look at the numbers, the percentage of Americans who now hold a more negative view toward China, which when we say China, we mean the government, not the people, it's the grown astronomically. Yeah, the Chinese Communist Party. So I believe you're right, actually, that there has been a wake-up call that was much needed to the American people. The fact that this government is not our friend, they're not our buddy, they're not even just a competitor. You describe them as a nemesis. I think we're all wrestling for what the word really is because you're reluctant to use the word enemy. Mm-hmm. But let me just say, if it does turn out, is entirely possible, if not even probable, that this pandemic was released on the United States by this government, that's the act of an enemy. And I do believe that you probably, you know, for those who were historians of the buildup of Nazi Germany throughout the 1930s. We always go back, and I think there's a recognition that the U.S., contrary to what Biden said in the debate, the second debate, we were never friendly with Nazi Germany, but were we too slow to realize the threat that was represented in Hitler's emergence when it was simply contained within Germany itself? There were certain points where there should have been a wake-up to the United States that this was not simply an issue of domestic suppression, but one that was an emerging threat. You know, that Churchill was very quick to recognize and FDR ultimately recognized, but recognized too late. I think if you take that historical parallel and apply it today, mm-hmm. I just got done reading a Los Angeles Times piece that came out, real thorough assessment of Xi Jinping and how strategic and calculating this government is, how they have evaluated so many things and how well they understand the United States and what they're up against, and that they're executing precisely on a plan that is designed to elevate this government to the singular force of influence in geopolitics in the world, both in multinational organizations and their, as the economic power of the world, and as the military and national security force of the world. So it's a complicated threat. You can't precisely compare it to the former Soviet Union and what we saw emerging with the Bolshevik Revolution in 17. You can't precisely compare it to the emergence of the Nazis in the 1933-34 period, but there's enough commonality there. And what's the biggest thing that should be the alarm for us? I think it's the fact that this regime has shown over and over and over again in its decisions, reflected maybe most clearly in the way they've approached the Uyghurs and the way they've made people disappear who were whistleblowers on the pandemic, that their concern for individual rights is non-existent. To them, it is the party first and foremost. Even Xi Jinping, ultimately, who's now been put in as president for life, so they're doubling down on his leadership for the next few decades. Even if he failed to execute on this plan, he would simply be replaced by another person to keep this machine moving forward. And that's the way to think of it. It's a steamrolling machine that will roll over individuals if it has to, though it would prefer not to. It would prefer to ascend in a very quiet and deliberate way. It's got money flowing all over this country. In academia, it's Chinese money. I think almost certainly in this campaign, there was a great letter written by Congressman Lance Gooden from Texas, Republican from Texas, to the EPA exploring Chinese money in this Sea Change Foundation, in the Sierra Club, in the Sunrise Movement, all these environmental groups. Isn't it convenient how their singular focus is on pulling down and hampering American industry and saying nothing about China's emerging CO2 emissions, which are the largest in the world?
Well, here's what makes China even more dangerous to me. First of all, they are very devious in how they operate, how they think, and how they project. They're very, very dangerous. But what's different about when we remember and go back in history, as you just mentioned, you went back to Nazi Germany, but then the USSR, which was our biggest enemy and world threat and the nuclear we were having this nuclear race at that point. And, you know, we all remember that. I mean, the Soviet Union was a major threat. Mikhail Gorbachev, Ronald Reagan, Margaret Thatcher, who, you know, teared down this wall, changed the whole world's history. You think about them, Michael, and you take China right now and what's developing with China. What's uniquely different about China, and to me, what is more of a threat, when you look at these other countries, back to the Soviet Union, which is now Russia, or much smaller than the Soviet Union, of course, and you look back to Nazi Germany and all of that, where China is a bigger threat right now is their 1.4 billion plus. They have an economy that is powerful. So they've got the money and the resources. You see, the Soviet Union, Russia, they don't have those resources. They were never that big. They don't have that power. Even back in their day, they were never anywhere near this. So when I'm thinking about, well, how do we, you know, pull China down a notch or two? I'm not sure we can. I mean, they've expanded their horizon. They've expanded their agenda all over the world. We've seen them taken and lie bold-faced to everybody, and then they move in, and they've been doing it through the Bush administration, through the Obama administration, and now Trump stood up to them, shut them down, called them out.
Well, he's in a very sensitive position. I really respect and appreciate that. I'm glad you identify that as well, because I think it's important the American people understand this, because this is something the administration can tell you when you're on the inside, is that he probably almost certainly has vastly greater understanding of China's complicity in the pandemic, the things they didn't do that allowed this thing to spread, than he's sort of comfortable communicating at this point, until we have a fully formulated intel plan and otherwise as it relates to it. But look, I mean, what was the first thing he did? He launched a major intelligence investigation into the origins of this pandemic, which, you know, you and I have talked about how I could not get CCP spokespersons to even acknowledge that that originated in China. But it is indisputable that it not just originated in China, but originated in Wuhan. It's indisputable that they allowed it to escape the country while they contained it internally. It's indisputable that they deny the World Health Organization entry to the country to evaluate the virus. It's indisputable that they denied the CDC entry. Trump was trying to get the CDC into China in the first few days of January and was unable to do that. It's indisputable they sent flawed PPE around the world, like 80, 90% flawed, not 10 or 20% flawed. You know, flawed, like that's consciously flawed.
Yeah.
And it's indisputable that even to this day, they have not, they ordered the samples of the virus destroyed. They closed down the labs that had begun doing sequencing testing, which would have been helpful in the testing development. And the few brave Chinese people who emerged to try to warn the world that this was a major threat have quietly disappeared and not been heard of. And again, on media, nobody really asking the CCP, hey, where are these guys? Which is a question I think we ought to be asking.
Right. Well, listen, let me add to what you say there, because and to tell folks, the word you use, indisputable, it's indisputable for us. You're right. But with them, it's definitely disputable because they deny everything. They deny it all.
Now, do you feel American voters understand it, Malcolm?
Great.
No, so we're a week and a half away from a major election.
I don't think they do. I don't think they do, Michael. I don't think they fully get it.
I think it's a major political consideration because, you know, as I've thought through where we are at this moment, which is always different than it was 2 weeks ago, different than where we'll be 2 weeks from now. Mm-hmm. I think there's three forces that are motivating the forgotten man and woman, the silent majority, as Nixon called them. And that is Hunter Biden's complete engagement in enrichment and the Biden Incorporated enrichment, which Joe Biden is almost in the eyes of American people complicit in. They're aware that there's something here. This guy's image is Joe from Scranton, has been blown up. He is another globalist who has used his position to profit personally from his positions of authority. Number two is the issue we're talking about, is that I think they see in the CCP and the fact that they still haven't really been held accountable. They still haven't acknowledged what they did. They haven't cooperated with countries of the world, even while they describe themselves as globalists, committed to international cooperation, right? How often do we hear that rhetoric out of them? You know, that we need to stop thinking selfishly about our own individual countries and think in terms of the whole world.
Yeah.
Well, this is a perfect example where they once again, completely deviate from their rhetoric. They've been all about themselves and not at all about the world as it relates to this. And I think the third issue is the street violence. The fact that we've had over $1 billion in property damage done to some of the great cities of this country, including the biggest city, New York City.
We're going to talk about that next. We're going to dive more into that street anarchy and all next. But Michael, staying on China here, you point out a lot of great examples right there. But let me ask you this here. You know, when we've looked at a common enemy here or a common adversary or nemesis, whatever the hell you want to call them, okay? I mean, they're certainly not a friend at this point, because a friend wouldn't allow a plague or pandemic to reach our ends of the world and let it circulate, close their own country down and let it circulate around the globe to kill all kinds of people and create havoc in their lives. Any kind of even a passing friend wouldn't do that, Michael. So they are clearly have their eyes and their sights set on America to pull us down, which is really what has gotten under the president's skin. Okay, this story is not being reported on properly. The American people, to answer the question you put out there a while ago, they are not really aware of these extreme dangers of China, not to the level of what they should be. Maybe they are a little bit more now with the plague, which is what I said to you up front there. Could this be a blessing in disguise? If anything, the pandemic has brought this out of the woodwork. It's brought it out of the closet for everybody to understand that China has a wicked, evil agenda. And they're looking to do some things that are not in our best interest in this country. But here's the problem I throw at you, Michael. I'd like you to opine before we get to break here. It's this. If we are successful in defeating this enemy, and I'm going to call him that for the moment, okay? Listen, America has always, in my opinion, united to ensure a desired outcome. Whatever we've gone through in our life, through world wars and through particular geographical wars or through terror attacks here in our country, we have always defeated around a common enemy to unite. And really, that's been the power of America, in fact. And I'm not seeing that with China this time, Michael. And I think this is a very important point. They are responsible for what's happening right now, but yet there's no uniting in bringing this information out. There's no uniting behind this common enemy right now, which is China. Isn't that a problem?
It is a challenge, I think. I mean, I was motivated to enter public life and public policy and politics by Reagan's vision of victory over communism. And at that time, I can recall that there were many Americans when I was calling for in support of the Reagan doctrine of aiding resistance movements around the world against Soviet client states and deploying missiles to NATO to offset the Soviets' capabilities, said, you know, Reagan was threatening war. He was creating a conflict that didn't exist. This conflict has always existed throughout the history of our country, certainly in the 20th and 21st centuries. You know, we have faced real, tangible military and other threats to our very well-being that manifested in this former Soviet Union, in former Nazi Germany. And you can see the common denominators in those two governments, and that's the use of the word former. I don't believe that in China we have a natural government. I think we have many ethnic groups and movements that feel no allegiance or alliance to Beijing and the central government. Mm-hmm. Massive growing opposition within China and throughout the world to their human rights practices, and a growing recognition in the United States that on an economic level, on a military level, and on a, you know, just plain decency level, that they have acted in damaging, harmful ways. And they have never had as high of an unpopularity rating among Americans as they do today. And that's despite the fact that they have very cleverly understood the need to maintain a degree of support among the American people and have put extraordinary resources into that. You can see it in all of these money that they put into academia, the focus that they've placed on teaching the Chinese language, on student exchanges. They've been very conscious of developing rapport and influencing public opinion in the United States. And I think we're going to start to see, I know for a fact, this is one of these things that I happen to know, is that there is an extraordinary amount of information that's going to be unloaded in the months and year to come about the magnitude of their penetration of this country. And, right, you know, a lot of pressure, I think, will build that will be essentially outrageous. And we've already seen a good, you know, extraordinary number of federal investigations, number of arrests, number of Chinese agents in the United States, mm-hmm, amazingly large.
Well, our relationship with China probably won't be the same for quite some time ahead. And I want to tell listeners as well, Michael is very, very versed on China and the relationships you hear him talking about. He appears quite often on some of these, even some of the Chinese state communications and media and outlets out in China. And you the one thing I've noticed when I've seen some of those, Michael, is you always hold them to task. And you're right. They kind of kick and scream, and they won't admit what we see as the obvious, even to the point of the pandemic.
It's always 4-1. You ever notice that? Four of those guys, they need four of them to take me down.
I do. And they still don't succeed. But they, you know, they don't change their mind, though. They kind of can't, because if they did, they would put their life in jeopardy. Don't you think? I mean, they would be taken out. That's how the CCP operates.
The magnitude of messaging discipline is extraordinary. Exactly. So for instance, which is why, you know, on a personal level, I don't hold any of them in disdain. You know, it's the only way up within China is within the Communist Party. You're not earning an income any other way. So these guys who are, you know, and they identify those who are most intelligent, they recruit them and bring them in. And these are the lines. You're not allowed to acknowledge, for instance, that the pandemic, which everyone knows originated in China, actually originated in China.
Amazing.
Xi Jinping decides that, you know, he's got a story behind all of it. And they're going
to
then.
All right. You know, we got to move on. We got to move on to get to the next segment here. But all right. So that's the China thing right there. And there's a lot more, Michael, we'll talk about on China, even over the next couple of weeks. I got to tell you this. It's a relationship that is not going to go away anytime soon. It has definitely been highlighted through this pandemic. And I think the last final takeaway on this whole thing is everybody out there can see in plain daylight here, the president and his feelings toward China, and you see how they've radically changed. You remember a while back, he would call Xi his friend, not so much anymore, because it's been badly bruised what's taking place here. So again, we're going to have to come together to defeat this enemy, Michael, in this country. And if we don't do that, this is something you and I will talk about more ahead, but I see this as a real problem, because I don't see us coming together as we have done with previous. I see this as a real problem, and I don't even see it at this point. So I don't know what's going to happen.
And I do think that's on the ballot basically here is, in Trump, a guy who's going to stand up to this regime? He's right now. We have the USS Ronald Reagan going through the Taiwan Straits. Yeah. The message that's being sent to Beijing is, hey guys, these are international waters. They're not yours.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure. In fact, I can almost predict that's not going to happen under Biden. We're going to disengage militarily from that regime. We're going to reduce these tariffs. We're going to go back to this policy of economic exploitation of the American working man and woman. And, so if that's what you want, Biden's your candidate.
Well, we all know Biden is in their pocket. Biden is their candidate.
Do the American voters know? Because, democracy is the greatest system of government in the world. But the vulnerability is we're only as good as the popular will of the country is.
That's right.
And when popular will turns against us or doesn't confront reality, we're an incredibly weak system. And they've exploited that.
We're not the knowledge out there is not known as much as you should be, Michael, which is why we're having this conversation even here right now. But no, it's not, because there's no reporting on it to the level of what you and I are discussing. I mean, there are some outfits like, we had Adam Credo on with the Washington Free Beacon up in the first hour. Really? You know how well spoken somebody like that
great
is, Michael.
Guy.
Yeah, it is. And that publication is doing some good things. And there
hugely
are those
important
like
things. Yeah. Some of the best reporting on China and Iran around anywhere.
I'm seeing that as well. And that's why it's important to get their voices out there as well as the written word. And that's what we're trying to do here. But all right, so here's what we'll do here again. What a great conversation here, China. I think you're a little more informed right now if you're listening to this. And, again, we need your help out there to get the word out there and to let Americans know what's really taking place here. All the conversations we're having are vitally important, and they're vital for our national security, our well-being, and to, keep this amazing, beautiful representative republic alive and well, which is, again, what is central to this theme here on America Out Loud. So what we'll do next, talk about the little bit more of what's happening here in the street anarchy around our nation that plays into the election. But I know Michael's got some numbers and facts and figures on damage and some other things that have happened. But the underlying thing also I want you to think about is Black America. This is kind of the quiet conversation right now. And I'll tell you, I've got several strong Black conservative voices on America Out Loud, including Dr. Carol Swain, as you know, and others. And I have to tell you, Black America is making a move, and they are seeing what's happening here. And we may potentially, I would say, and I think it's going to happen, major turnout and major support for the conservative movement, and more so President Donald Trump right at this very moment, which could alter the election here for sure in 2020. We'll pick more of that up, friends, in just a moment as Viewpoint Presents continues.
Did you know the average person spends 26 years of their life sleeping? The real troubling statistic is that we spend 7 years of our life trying to get to sleep, struggling with racing minds, tossing and turning. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Sleep is proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance. Until now, most sleep supplements haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthycell.com/sleep.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
All right, so the other big conversation that's happening here is, it has to be, Michael, the street anarchy that we're seeing play out in all of our cities. And this is something I was talking about 5 years ago, before even this civil unrest has happened. As the president even pointed out at the last debate, and as we continue to point out to the American people, they are the vast majority, it's got to be, I don't know if it's 100%, Michael, but it surely is 95%. They are all Democrat-run cities and states and municipalities, which is why Pelosi's trying to get the money to bail them out. And they're all badly run. They badly operated. And a lot of the urban centers, and including the part of Black America, has suffered greatly under this socialist Democrat regime. A lot of them now are waking up, and we see this transition happening here. What do you think about that?
Well, yeah, you see the connectivity there between them committing suicide, basically, in their own cities for the purposes of making a political point, and then turning to Congress and the federal government to basically bail them out. In essence, what's happening is, you know, blue city mayors allowing this complete destruction of their cities, turning to more prosperous red state run states and cities to subsidize their unwillingness to enforce the rule of law. It's important that that connectivity be put in place. And that's one of the reasons that President Trump correctly has been engaged in that sustained level of negotiation with Democrats on next stimulus, is that that is a sticking point, is that those cities and states that have enforced the rule of law and not destroyed their cities should not be penalized because others have. And I think you can go further than that to sort of say this shouldn't be happening regardless of who's running these cities. But certainly it has been a wake-up call. I think you nailed it about the direction of African-American sentiment in this election. Mm-hmm. One of the challenges confronting Republicans in the last few decades has been underrepresentation of support from African-Americans. And the Rasmussen numbers that came out the day after the debate, when President Trump correctly was able to go back and explain the crime bill that Biden co-sponsored, not that he's voted for, that it was his concept that locked up like a third of African-American males in this country or had them on parole. That when he explained that, and then in turn explained his vision that he has of criminal justice reform, and the fact that, you know, we have too many nonviolent people in jail in this country, period, and that we need, and that the conditions of those incarcerated are unacceptable. I mean, those were such reasonable steps that were put in to what was called the First Step Act. This is the first president who's really taken those initiatives that have disproportionately impacted African Americans across this country. And, you know, we don't talk about it enough, but the magnitude of, like, if you take a father and you put him in jail for 10 years and 10 crucial years of his kids having to grow up in a fatherless home, and, you know, with a family that's obviously got no economic resources, no learning potential because the dad's in jail. So, you know, all sort of the ripple effect throughout that society is extraordinary. And it's held back African-Americans in this country. Democrats have done nothing in modern times to help this political constituency that has handed it all this power.
Yeah. Did you notice Biden didn't have a comeback with any of that Trump brought up at the debate? There was no comeback.
What's he going to say? He didn't co-sponsor. I guess he could. I guess he could say, like he said on Huntergate, that he doesn't know anything about it. I guess he could deny that he co-sponsored the crime bill of the 1990s. But, you know, it's pretty much sure that Biden spelled Biden, and that's who's listed as the co-sponsor on that bill.
Yeah, no, he just looks down. He doesn't look up. He doesn't acknowledge it. And he knows he's in trouble. So he pivots. He pivots. And that's what
I told you my
does.
Thesis, right? You and I talked briefly out there. I'll tell you something. Carefully watched this guy today for the first time in a while, as opposed to just casually watching him. Mm-hmm. What I see in his mannerisms is a guy who's timid. He's afraid. I think he's well aware that there is an extraordinary amount of concerns that are yet to be released on Biden Incorporated. And by the way, the FBI's involvement as well, I had to clarify this during the 2016 election as it related to Hillary Clinton. The FBI doesn't look into things. They don't just sort of investigate things. When they initiate an investigation, there has to be probable cause under Fourth Amendment basis. When they seize a laptop, they have to have probable cause. This is a criminal investigation. That's the only type of investigations the FBI does. You know, so it's being sort of presented in media like they're kind of exploring it, looking around, just making sure there's nothing to be worried about. That's not what the FBI does. This is an active criminal investigation that is investigating witnesses. You've seen the business partner of Hunter Biden has been mandated to be interviewed by the FBI. You've seen them seize equipment. This is an active ongoing criminal investigation to which Biden, you know, what's his label? Is he a person of interest? Is he is he just simply a witness? He's something as it relates to all of this, because he's trying to sort of say, well, there's all that's over there, but it's not at all connected to me. Yeah. It's completely connected to him. Every one of these deals would not have happened with crack addicted, military evicted, completely geopolitically ignorant Hunter Biden if he weren't Hunter Biden. If he were Hunter Smith, these deals would not have been done.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Listen, we have 90 seconds left. Let me say this. I'm going to say to you something, building on what you just say there, Michael. I think if you look at all the evidence, you look at all the emails, you follow any of those bouncing balls you wish to follow, I would say this to you. He should not be running for president of the United States. When you talk about criminal, 100% Joe Biden should belong. I believe he belongs in prison. It's got nothing to do with what his political stripe or what have you. But he is a traitor, and he has sold out America. What do you say to that?
Well, it looks to me like absent the computer repair store in Delaware's coming forward and giving this to Giuliani and then releasing it to the FBI, we might not have known much of all of this stuff. So, you know, my thanks go out to a guy like Senator Johnson, who you interviewed in 10 a.m. and who investigated this diligently and put together a very fact-based report. And also it goes out to, you know, sometimes just the regular American who says, you know, I don't like the looks of this. And I certainly hope the American voters will awaken to the reality that we have tens upon tens of millions, and I'm using that as opposed to hundreds of millions when I'm suspecting it might be into that range, that have flown into this Biden incorporated operation in exchange for political influence. And there's, you know, great reporting out even yesterday that shows that the correlation between Biden's ascent into foreign policy influence in the Obama administration completely correlates with the flow of this money, meaning it wasn't coming. And then he assumed leadership position on Russia, on Ukraine, on some of these China issues with making state visits. And then the money started to flow.
Well, we are talking criminal activity here. That's the key word and the takeaway, I think, out there you should take away from this final part of the conversation here. If you hear Senator Johnson up front there with this very important interview and discussion, and I mean, he covers a lot of ground there on Viewpoint this Sunday in the first hour here. This is a criminal activity, as Michael Johns points out very appropriately there. And it all goes back to not only the Biden family, but Joe Biden himself. So I would say to you this. He should not be running for president. What he's done is criminal behavior. People need to be locked up for criminal behavior. But that's the problem, as everybody points out in recent times. My fellow Americans, there are two levels of justice in this country. You don't have to look too far to see who else has gotten away with so much from Washington, D.C. It is sick. It is sad. It needs to change. And until we, the people, stand up and make those change, we're going to continue to have these kinds of problems, because the next set of politicians are going to take advantage of a situation that is easily to be taken advantage of. So it needs to stop here once and for all. Well, listen, thank you for being with us here on the mission here on Viewpoint Presents. We are going to be all over this now. Next couple of few weeks going to be very, very important to our nation here. There's a lot of work to do. I recommend you help us along the way. Roll up your sleeves. Let's get busy here. There's a republic to save, and there's a lot of information and honesty we need to get out to the American people. Thank you again for being with us on the journey here. It's time to get involved and get loud.